We are holding on Kuftes Zayin Amud Beis, a little bit past the middle of the Amud. We mentioned in the Mishnah about there can be when you shecht an animal, when you shecht a baby animal that's nursing, you may find milk in its stomach. So then that milk, as we talked about before, might be clear. It might still be normal milk that hasn't really been digested yet, or it might already be curdled, having started to be affected by the digestive juices. We also talked about then there would be the actual lining of the stomach itself. Now, all those things, the milk that's there and the stomach lining, all of them contain an enzyme called rennet, which is used in cheese making. So we discussed in the Mishnah what exactly would you be allowed and not allowed to use. So first we said in the Mishnah that the contents of the stomach of an animal of a goy or of nevela would be also. We discussed two possibilities. What it means an animal of a goy doesn't mean that you bought an animal live from a goy, and the concern is that it may have nursed from a non-kosher animal shortly before it was shechted, or do we just mean an animal that was killed by a goy, which is the same thing as nevela, therefore. We mentioned in that connection that Rabbi Yeshua had changed his mind on a related point. The Gemara discusses, the Mishnah and the Gemara discussed in Masechet Avodah Zarah, why did Chazal make a gzeira not to eat cheese made by goyim, given that, by definition, at least with the technology of then, cheese could be made only from the milk of kosher animals, so on the face of it, there should be no problem of cholavakum with it, and the Gemara, and so it mentions over there, Rabbi Yeshua at first took the view that the reason is because they used the stomach content for curdled milk from a nevela. But then Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind and said that's not the reason, and gave other reasons. Or in the end, he didn't really in the Mishnah there in Avodah Zarah, he actually doesn't give a reason for Rabbi Shmuel, and the Gemara explains there because at that time the Gzeira was relatively new, and Rabbi Yeshua is concerned that if he gives the real reason, then people are going to say, that doesn't really matter, that's not so important, and they're going to come to be careless with the Gzeira. Once enough time has passed, then you can tell the real reason because people have gotten used to the idea. So now the Gemara says, we learned the Mishnah, Ksheda Shiyankim Na Trefa Bafola. We said that if a kosher animal nursed from a Trefa animal, and by Trefa we don't just mean where the mother who provided the milk is a non-kosher animal, Trefa over here would mean, in the narrower sense, a kosher animal that has one of the defects that we learned back in the third and fourth parak, that would make it Trefa. So now we said if a kosher animal nursed from a Trefa one, then the stomach contents are also. And the other way around, if it was a treif or noose from a kosher, then the stomach contents would be mutter. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, v'hokatani reisha, so kshir v'shir yonkim and atshir ekev v'fola. The Gemara says, what do you mean? V'hokatani reisha, kevas ergi kachom v'shol nevela, arezer asura. We said that the stomach content of an animal of a goy or of nevela is asur, because in other words, now that it's in the stomach of a nevela, it's considered to be part of its body. So then the question is, so what are you telling me? So then by the same token, if a treifa animal nursed from a kosher one, so what? The milk comes from a kosher animal. The fact is now it's in the body of a non-kosher animal, and based on what we said earlier in the Mishnah, it ought to be considered part of its body, and it ought to be also. And the answer is Amar Rav Chista. The Gemara gives an answer. Rav Chista says, Reisha nirka uchon nevelas. Because in the Reisha, you're talking about the animals in nevela. It wasn't even shechted probably. So it appears like the person is eating nevela. It appears to, fine, granted the milk is not in the curdled milk and its stomach is not actually part of its body, but nevertheless, at least it appears to be like nevela. So it's kind of like Maris Ayin, and the Chacham don't want you to do it. Hofa ikashvita. Here, the fact is that there was shchita. Now, in both, it's not as most, Rashi explains, it's not as disgusting as nevela. Now, there would be no issur in it either way, because as the Mishnah said, it's just collected in its stomach. It came from an outside source, and it actually is not part of the body of the animal. Nevertheless, though, when there was no shchita, then the Chachamim are going to be machmer and say, because then it looks more like something that's completely osur. But Rava asks Rav Chista, the lab called it, if you're going to learn it that way, the lab called the chenu, why on the contrary, the other way around, Uman nevela de me'isa, madacha nevela, which is disgusting, the isharis la kevasa, la osa la mechomina. Now, even if you're going to say, fine, you can use that curdled milk in its stomach and you can use it to make cheese. That's not going to make people think, oh, well, if I'm allowed to eat that, then I'm allowed to eat the rest of the animal. No, people know that a nevela is off limits. Amrit Loy, and nevertheless you're saying that you can't use the keva, you can't use the stomach contents. Well, then trefa shchuta, so then a trefa, which is shechted, precisely because it's not so mos, it's not going to be so obvious that you shouldn't eat the rest of it. So then, the shoris, if you allow the stomach contents, osi lemechomina, you may come to eat from the actual animal itself. So, like koshakin, shouldn't it be all the more so that we ought to make it also, because we don't want people to mistakenly think once you allowed to eat once you allowed to use the stomach contents, then you're able to make cheese, then you're allowed to use or to eat any part of it. So the logic should be the other way around. What do you mean, nira ka'ifel nevelus versus ikash shtipta? The fact that it's shtipta, but it still also makes it worse. Ella, I'm Rabbi Yitzchok. I'm Rabbi Yechanan, like Hashas. Okay, Rabbi Yitzchok says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that it's not a question. Again, the two parts of our Mishnah have to do with before Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind, when Rabbi Yeshua originally said in answer to Rabbi Shmuel's question why cheese made by Goyim is also, and at first Rabbi Yeshua had offered that the reason is because they use the keva, they use the stomach contents to make for the cheese, and then the Gemara had pointed out in Masechta Avodah Zarah that's not really a valid argument. That content should be mutter, like we were talking about before. Namely, in the Gemara over there, Rabbi Shmuel in the Mishnah over there, Rabbi Shmuel asks that, for example, suppose you have a baby animal that had just nursed, and now you're bringing it as an oilon. So an oila is also b'hanam. Nevertheless, we find that the koyanim are actually allowed to drink that milk. And okay, even though there are some tanoim hold you allowed to, and even the chachamim would disagree, would say only drabana. So then Rabbi Yeshua gives a different reason that they don't just use the stomach contents; they use the stomach lining from animals that are nevela. So therefore, fine. Kan koyim chazara. So the reisha of our Mishnah that says that the keva of a nevela animal is also the stomach contents would be could kan koyim chazara. That would be before Rabbi Yeshua. That would be Rabbi Yeshua's original version that milk in there is also because it's in the stomach of a nevela and it's considered part of it. Whereas the rest of our Mishnah is after Chazara, is after Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind and said, you're right, actually, that stomach content would not actually be osur, as we see that it's motu even by an oila, and the reason why goyish cheese is osur, because of a different consideration, and therefore it comes out you are in fact allowed to drink the milk that is in the stomach of the trefa, as long as it came from a kosher animal, and therefore the milk itself comes from a kosher source. And again, the Mishnah was not moved from its place. Once the Mishnah was already formulated in a certain wording, then we keep it, even though the underlying basis for it, namely Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, it no longer exists because Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind. More on this topic about keva, about stomach contents. The Gemara says, "Amar Abba, Amar Yechanan, ma'amidin keva snevelos." You are, in fact, based on what we just said, you are allowed to use the stomach content of a nevela animal. So again, it nursed from a kosher animal. Now it's nevela. You're still allowed to use that stomach content to make cheese. However, you're not allowed to use for that purpose the stomach contents, the curdled milk that you find in an animal that was shechted by a goy. So Reb Shimon bar Abba asks Reb Chiya bar Abba, Kiman, who would that be like? Is that specifically Reb Eliezer? Is that specifically like the opinion of Reb Eliezer? The Omar that he said earlier in the Masechta, Stam Nachshavas Ovid Kachavim, Lavrits Kachavim, that by default, we assume that when a goy shechts, he has in mind two for avodah zarah, and that would mean, therefore, that everything of it, everything, and including the milk and the stomach, would actually be considered to create a avodah zarah. It would be something that's offered to avodah zarah. And even if we say, even if it's not part of its body, before, when we're talking about a matter of nevela, we can talk about whether the milk in its stomach is part of its body or not, and if not, we can say it's not part of its body. But when it comes to tikkurevus avodah zarah, we don't make such a distinction. In fact, Rashi points out even the waste of the animal, even the actual dung of the animal, would actually be also because we say the Gemara explains in avodah zarah because that all of that helps make the animal look bigger and fatter, and therefore like a more respectable carbon, so to speak, and therefore all of it becomes also all of it is considered part of the tikkurevus. So are you telling me then, Rabbi Chiya Abba, that your din about that if a goy shechts an animal, then you're not allowed to use the keva of it for making cheese, why would it be any different than Nevela? That seems to be like Rebbe Eliezer, who says that whenever a goy kills an animal, he has in mind Avodah Zarah. Amalei, okay, Rava says, yes, the Elakaman. Well, who else? Yes, that's exactly who I'm talking about, according to you. On the other hand, he also of Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak. On the other hand, when Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar Rav Yechanan, he said in the name of Rav Yechanan the other way around, or not the other way around, but differently. Ma'amin ben the kevus nevela ben the kevus shchitas over the kachavim. That no, you can use for making cheese. You can use whether the stomach content of the nevela, because again, it's not part of its body. And we said before that even Rav Yeshua retracted his opinion, and you can also use. That you can also use the stuff from the stomach content of an animal that was shechted by a goy, even though it's nevela. And the point is, Shalom Lofer should give Rabbi Eliezer. No, we don't have to be concerned about Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. We don't have to be concerned about Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that the goy may have had Avodah Zarah in mind when he shechted. Okay, so what's the bottom line halacha? The Gemara says v'hilchsa. The bottom line halacha is as follows: Ein man min ba'ur kevas nevela. You cannot make cheese using the stomach lining of the keva of the stomach of a nevela. Then it's going to be also. Now when it comes to using the stomach lining of a kosher animal, even then, we said in the Mishnah in Yesh Benosim Tam, if it gives a flavor, then it would be also. But that you have that as we learned about yesterday, there is machloekas. Does that apply? It does not apply across the board, or does not apply. We had different gusaris in the Mishnah over there, whether we had the word kshera or not. So does it apply even to a kosher, even to the stomach lining of a kosher animal? And we would say if there's so much of it that it gives a flavor into the cheese, a flavor of meat, then it's going to be also. And only if it doesn't give that flavor, then it's going to be mutter. It's basar to follow either way. So the Rambam explains, because look, after all, basar by itself, meat by itself is mutter, milk by itself is mutter. It's only the combination that becomes aser. So when you have enough for it to give a flavor, then we're going to aser it, and we're going to say that's not bottle, because dovra mamid, something that gives that changes the consistency of it in the space that makes it cheese, is not going to be bottle. But when it doesn't give such a flavor, then you're fine. But now we're saying, though, if that piece of skin, if that stomach lining came from a nevela, then it would actually be also a no. You cannot use it to make cheese, and then it wouldn't even matter if it's noise and town. Avamam in the cavus nevela. However, you can make cheese using the stomach content of a nevela, the curdled milk in there, or the cavus shchitas of the kachavim. You can also use for the same purpose. You can use the stomach contents of an animal that was shechted by a goy, which again has the same din as a nevela. Over cavus kshera. Now the next couple of lines are in parenthesis, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about there are different gusoys over here, but let's learn it. Over cavus kshera shiyung from a trefa. You could also use the stomach content of a kosher animal that nursed from a trefa, because at that point even though that milk in its stomach came from a non-kosher animal, nevertheless, it would still be allowed because we consider it, as the Gemara is going to say, pure shabal mahu. It's not really considered milk anymore. It's just considered a waste product. And therefore, it's not also. But kosher came, the kevas trefa, she yonkan a trefa. How much more so than you could use the stomach content of a trefa, which had nursed from a kosher animal, because then there's no question the milk is not part of its body and it's consented and it came from a kosher source. My time, and why is that? And the idea would be because the milk that's collected in the stomach, it's just pure shabama, it's just a waste product, and therefore you can't answer it. Now we learned yesterday there was a long Rashi earlier on this Amud where Rashi discussed the case where suppose that you salted the keva, the stomach, to kasher it, and you left the milk in there and didn't take it out from beforehand. And Rashi explains at great length that in fact it is also, we're not even going to say not by not or anything like that, it's going to be absolutely also, and we're not even going to say it's pure shabalma, we're not going to say that it's a waste product or something like that. It's still going to be also. So therefore, Rashi, in fact, does not have this line and a half in his Gersa, because according to him, it wouldn't work. What do you mean, Kirsha Ba'almahu, and therefore it should be Mutter? Rashi himself holds that, in fact, such a thing would be also. There were different explanations of what exactly Rashi was not Gerdus. The Rosh says that Rashi is not Gerdus to all these three lines, the whole Hilfsa part. The Rosh says that Rashi is not Gerdus. The Beis Yosef says, just he takes out one little bit, Kshedah Shiyonka Menat Tarefa, the case of a kosher one who knows from a non-kosher, from a Tarefa animal. And the Maharshal says he wasn't Gerdus to Shabalmahu. Anyway, Tosfos Tosfos says that no, we are goyis that, and in fact it would mean that all of these things, would in fact be mutter, because again, Pirush Ba'almahu. So now, when Tosfos says, what about the Mishnah, which had said that a kosher one who nursed from a non-kosher one, then the stomach content is also. So Tosfos, he draws a distinction whether the milk is still clear and normal, still has the consistency of milk, versus where it's curdled. Where it's curdled, then it's considered pirsha. And that would mean, therefore, Tosfos disagrees with what we learned yesterday from Rashi. That Rashi had again mentioned that if you salt the kava, even if you find and you find the milk afterwards in it, even if that milk is curdled, the kava is going to be absolutely osir. Tosfos says maybe not. If the milk is curdled, then no, it's not going to be osir, because then, like the Gemara is saying over here, pirsha ba'almahu, it's just a waste product. Then the reef has yet another explanation of it. There's no difference with what the consistency of the milk is. Either way, it's considered pirsha ba'alma. So then in that case, again, when our Mishnah says that cheder that nursed from the trefer, that the milk in the stomach would be osir, would again be Rabbi Yeshua's original opinion, whereas afterwards not. So in practice, you have in the end you have a number of different opinions of Rishonim. What exactly is the deal as far as using the stomach lining? It's a lot more straightforward. If you use the stomach lining of a non-kosher animal, then the cheese is absolutely osir. And if you use the stomach lining, a piece of the stomach of the of a kosher animal, then it'll be mutter unless it's nice and tam, unless it actually gives a flavor into the cheese. As far as this din of milk that's found in the stomach, so in Shulchan Aruch it brings, so first of all, it's not considered milk. You would actually be allowed, he brings an opinion that you would actually be allowed to cook milk, meat with it. Then yesh misha osir, some say that's osir. And that's, and then Amos is the again. That is indeed the prevalent minug. As far as, again, if you find this milk in the stomach, so then in Shulchan Aruch it says that if it was salted together with the kava, or if it stayed in there for one day, then you would be also to make cheese with it, but otherwise you would be able to. And then Amos goes on to go into details about what happens, is there a distinction in that regard between whether it was regular clear milk or whether it had become curdled. In practice nowadays, I don't know if anybody makes cheese with that type of rennet anymore. I think nowadays they pretty much all use synthetic rennet. So goyish cheese is still also because of the gzeder of the chachamim, and we don't say that it makes a difference even if the reason for the gzeder no longer exists. The gzeder still exists, but as far as kosher cheese, you don't have much of an issue with these things of what was used to curdle it. Okay. The Mishnah says, Now that we've spent this whole perek talking about boss of the follow, so now let's talk about two other things that come from an animal which are also to eat, chaylev and the blood. So let's talk about distinctions between those. Chaymer bechaylev mebedam, you have a certain chumra when it comes to chaylev over blood. Bechaymer bedam mebechaylev, and vice versa, there's a chumra in blood over chaylev. Now, both of them, of course, in the sky have parts for eating, but nevertheless, each one has its unique feature. Because the chaylev of an animal, that if it's a korban, then the ila is going to apply to it. Because it's not something given to the koyanim. The basic rule is like this. With kodshe kodshim, we're going to learn more about this in the Masechta Me'ilah next year, Bez Hashem, but with kodshe kodshim, oila, chatas, the other ones in that category, the rule is Me'ilah applies to them from when you makdish them until the parts that need to be offered on the Mizbeach are offered, until the blood is sprinkled and the chaylev is offered. After that, the meat of it is supposed, in the case of most korbanos, in the case of most kodshe kodshim, the meat is eaten by the kohen, and an oila not. So an oila is another matter, but whatever. In any case, for the chatas and ofshem, etc., the meat, then me'ila will no longer apply to it. Kodshim kalim is the other way around. Me'ila does not apply to them yet until after they're shechted and the blood is sprinkled. Me'ila then applies to the emurim, the chaylev, the inner parts of the animal that are to be offered on the mizbeach. So now the chaylev then is going to be subject to me'ila, whether by kodshim or kodshim kalim. And in addition, if a person eats the chaylev of a korban, he's going to be chayev. If the korban is chigul, as we learned about in Zvachim, then he's going to be chayev for eating the chaylev as well. And similarly, if the korban is noisir, if it was left over after the deadline, then also he's going to be chayav for eating the chaylev. In other words, he's going to be chayav not only for eating chaylev, but also for eating noisir. The tome, and similarly, if he's tome and ate the chaylev, then when also we're talking about that, we're also the same thing. We're talking about that there would be chores over there. So therefore he'd be chayav two chatos, one for chaylev and one for being tome. Now that's if the person himself is tome. Rashi stresses over here, we're talking about tumas haguf. We're talking about where the person himself is tome, as opposed to if the chaylev became tome, then there's a lav involved to eat it, but there's no chores, and therefore there'd be no chatos for him. Okay, Masha'inkin Badam, none of those things apply to the blood, as we're going to explain in the Gemara. Me'ila doesn't apply to the blood for reasons that we're going to explain in the Gemara, and Pigul, Noisim, and Tomei also don't apply to it either. The pigle and noser and tome, the basic idea is that those apply only to something which only something which has a matzir, something which itself was also to bring on the mizbeach until something else was done, and now it becomes mutter. The blood itself is the matzir, and therefore pigle and noser and tome don't apply to it. On the other hand, you have a chumra in blood over chaylev, shadam knows the behavior of chayev ois, because the issue of blood applies to wild animals, to domestic animals and wild animals and birds, bein tmei and bein tahorim, whether they're kosher or non-kosher species. So a person were to drink the blood of a non-kosher animal or a non-kosher bird, he's equally chayev for the issue of drinking blood. Kores v'mezid and chatas v'shoyim. The chaylev and a noig, whereas the issue of chaylev applies only to domestic kosher animals, as you learned earlier in the Masechta. Even among the kosher animals, the wild animals, deer and so forth, the chaylev is perfectly mutter to eat. Okay. So Rashi points out, the pasuk actually says, that it's specifically from the animals that Hashem gave us to bring us korbanos, and that itself means, in other words, that and a person eats chaylev from that, it's chayav paris, so therefore it's clear that it's only the animals that are brought as korbanos, therefore excluding wild animals, which are not. Okay, so the Gemara says, Menohani Nii, where do we know that chaylev, that me'ila is going to be, that chaylev is going to be subject to me'ila? Now, again, as we said, there's a difference in that regard between Kodshe Kodshim and Kodshim Kalim. Kodshim Kalim, Shlomim, Toida, etc., the Ila does not apply to them from the beginning. It applies only to the Emurim afterwards, to the Chaylev and the Emurim. Now, the question is, the Menohani Mili, the Gemara's question is really how we know that point, that Ne'ila should apply to the Chaylev even though Ne'ila has not applied to that Korban until now. Me'ila, by the way, as I haven't explained, Me'ila is if a person uses something of Kodshim that they're not supposed to, then the Mezid, the Chayav Malkus, they have to pay Hefdish, the value of the thing, plus 25%, the Chomish, plus they have to bring a Korban Asham. This is the Asham Me'ilas that we mentioned in the morning gathering. Okay, so we're saying that Me'ila applies to Chaylev regardless of Kodshim or Kodshim Kavim. So Menahani Me'ila, where do we know that from? So the Gemara says, Omer Abyanai, the Omer Kura, like this. The Torah tells us about the Par Kohen Mashiach and the case where the Kohen Gadol makes a mistake in Halacha and mistakenly follows his own sack, and then he has to bring a korban afterwards. We learned about it in Masechta Horius a couple of years back. Now the Pasuk says, now the Pasuk describes how the Kohen Gadol brings the par and sprinkles the blood inside in the Heichel and so forth, and then it lists all the Emurim that he has to take out of it and burn them on the Mizbeach, and then the Pasuk says, Kasher Yuran Mishor Zevach HaShlomim, just like is lifted up from an ox that's brought as a Shlomim. Now the question is, why do we need that? Between Malam and Mishor Zevach HaShlomim after. What exactly are we learning from an ox of Zevach HaShlomim? It listed by the Shlomim in Perek Gimel of Vayikra, it lists the Emurim that have to be taken out of it. Here in Perek Dalad by the Parakoyim Mashiach, it lists the exact same Emurim. So why does the Pasuk need to bother telling us like an ox of Zevach HaShlomim? So what exactly now are we learning from the Shor Zevach HaShlomim that we didn't already know? It already lists all the Emurim. So the answer is Harei Zabola Lamed Benim Salamin. This is one of those cases where it looks like the Torah wants to teach us from A to B, and really actually we're learning something from B to A. Namely, the way the Torah phrases it makes it sound, there's a detail about the Parakoy Mashiach that you don't know yet. Refer back to the Shlomim in the previous Perek, and you'll find what it is. Actually, though, it's the other way around. What we're really doing is the Torah is giving us this pasuk to tell us, on the contrary, there's a detail about the Shlomim that you didn't know yet. You're going to learn it now from the Parakoy Mashiach. And what is that? Makish shows up a Hashlomim, the Parakoy Mashiach. The Torah is making us a hekish between them, and it teaches us, Mar Parakoy Mashiach, yesh ve Me'ila. Now, the Parakoy Mashiach, Me'ila definitely applies there, because it is Kodshe Kodshim, and the rule is that Kodshe Kodshim are subject to Me'ila from the beginning, from when you're Makdash them, because they're called. The rule Me'ila applies to anything which is called Kodshe Hashem, the Kodshim of Hashem, and Kodshe Kodshim are in that category because they all go to Hashem. Sometimes it's completely burnt on the Mizbeach, like the Oila. Sometimes not, like the Chatzos, but they're all called Kodshe Hashem. So, there's no question that Parakoy Mashiach has Me'ila to it. Well, therefore, the Hekesh teaches us, Af Shoz, Avach HaShlomim, Yesh Me'ila, the same way an ox of Shlomim is going to have Me'ila applied to it, but not to the whole thing, at least to the Chelev of it. So that's a way that we can learn that Shlomim and other similar Korbanos that are Kodshim Kalim, that Me'ila does apply to the Chelev of them. This just brings up a point that the Gemara in Zvachim, we had a while back in Zvachim, we had a long sugya on the question that with Kodshim, you have a unique rule that doesn't apply anywhere else in the Torah, that when you learn from Din A to Din B, you can't necessarily then go and learn that same concept from B to C. This is called Dovra Lamed, Ein Chozer Malamed, and we had a whole sugya over there going through the various permutations of that, when we can and when we can't. One example, as we said, when you have something that you learn with a hekesh, you can't then learn something else from it by a hekesh. And the Gemara explained over there that because you have also the case where the tzibur has mistakenly worshipped the Hadazara and needs to bring a korban, and they also need to take off the emurim of their korban and burn it on the mizbeach. So you need this pasuk over here in order to be able to learn which emurim you take, so you don't have lamed min alamed. So we're using that pasuk for that. So how now are we using it to learn? How now are we using it to learn this din about Me'ila? So first of all, Tosfos explains that Rabbi Yanai over here can learn like a different Gemara there in Zvachim that learns the Seirei Avodah Zarah from a different pasuk, and therefore he's not bothered by the fact you're not going to have a lamed min a lamed anyway. And also, then Tosfos says the whole thing over here may really only be an asmachta. It may be a din that's primarily dirabbanan, and just the pasuk, and just we find an asmachta, we find a hint for it in the pasuk. So that's how Rabbi Yanai learns. However, Amalei Rav Chanina, but Rav Chanina says, why do you have to learn it from there? Is it ugly to you? Is it unattractive to you? What Rebbe learns instead? Rebbe had been the Rebbe of both, had been the teacher of both Rabbi Yanai and Rav Chanina. So Rav Chanina says, what are you, Rabbi Yanai, having to come up with your own limud of how we know that Me'ila applies to a murim of Kodshim Kalim, when instead we have a perfectly good limud that Rebbe, that our teacher Rebbe gave to us, that when the pasuk says, all chelav Hashem, all chelav goes to Hashem, that means the rabbis say murim Kodshim Kalim Me'ila. That means that from that we learn that the murim of Kodshim Kalim are subject to Me'ila. So why don't you learn from that? However, so Mar says, Almar Abaya, Sabaya. So at that point, apparently Rabbi Yanai did not have an answer. But Abaya in a later generation gives an answer. Almar Abaya, it's Sabaya says, as a matter of fact, we need both limudim. The Ikos Rahman of Chelev, if the Torah had only said the Pasuk that Rabbi Chanina is quoting from Rebbe's Drosha Chelev, or rather Tol Chelev, Avamina, then you would think, Chelev Ein, fine, that applies to the Chelev that Me'ila is, that's subject to Me'ila. Yoseres or Shtei Kloyes Loi. But who says it also? Now we have parts of the animal that are offered on the Mizbeach by all Korbanos, even though they're not Chelev as narrowly defined. We learned earlier in the Masechta definitions of what Chelev is, that it has a peel, it has a membrane on it, it peels off in one sheet, etc. But then you have a few parts of the animal that are brought together, that are brought on the Mizbeach and offered, even though they're not Chelev. You have Yoseres, you have the Yoseres HaKoved, as the Pasuk calls it. Rashi learns that it means a diaphragm. There are other Meforshim who learn that it means a certain part of the liver itself. Whatever. You also have the shteit tzlayos. You have the two kidneys. The fat on the kidneys, as we learned, is chelev, which has to be offered on the mizbeach. But the Torah tells us the kidneys themselves are also offered. Well, then, if the Torah had only told us kol chelev hava amina, then you would have thought chelev ein. The chelev itself is subject to meila because of the pasuk kol chelev lashem. Yeseres shteit tzlayos loy. But the yeseres and the two kidneys are not necessarily subject to meila. They're not chelev after all. Therefore, we need Rabbi Yannai's Hekish to tell us, well, those are taken off of the Shlomim and offered on the Mizbeach. Those are taken off of the Chayav Kohen Gadol and offered on the Mizbeach. And Meila applies equally well to them. On the other hand, the Pasuk Rachman Akasha Yuram, but if you only had that Pasuk of Rabbi Yannai's Hekish, Havamin Chaylef Alya, then you would think that maybe the fat of the alya, of the fat tail of a sheep, the less of a shur. Now that's not all, in the case of an ox, that's not all for the mizbeach. In the first place, loy, maybe ne'ilah wouldn't apply to him. Namely, when it comes to all korbanos, you have the same parts that are the same emurim that are offered on the mizbeach, except for an olah, of course, where the whole thing is burnt. But anyway, from korbanos where parts are burnt, the same parts are burnt with the exception of if the korban is a sheep. If it's a sheep specifically, and not a goat, and not cattle, then you also take the tail, which in certain breeds of sheep, the tail is very fat, and it has a specific name. It's called the alya, and you offer that on the mizbeach as well. Now again, that's not chelev, as the Gemara is going to explain in a minute, that even though the Torah calls it chelev, it's not also to eat, but it is offered on the mizbeach. Well then, but again, that applies only to a sheep. It doesn't apply to a bull. Now, the Hekish of Rabbi Yannai is talking about bulls, because you have a bull of the Torah is comparing a bull that's brought as a shlomim versus the bull that the Kohen Gadol brings as his chatas. So if we only had that Hekish, then he would have thought, Havamina, Chelev Alya, the lust of a shur, that maybe Ni'ilah is not applicable to the Alya, which is not found, which is not offered in a shur in the first place. And therefore, Kosrach Monaco Chelev, therefore the Torah writes for Chelev, and the fact is that Alya is also called Chelev in the Torah. The Torah calls it Chelvoy or Alya Smima. It's Chelev, the complete tale. Okay, so therefore, in fact, we need both Lemudim, because having both Lemudim clarifies for us that what's subject to Ne'ilah by Kodshin Kalim is all of the Emurim, all the parts that are offered on the Mizbeach, whether they are in the narrow definition of Chelev or not, but all of those, and therefore it's going to depend on the species of animal, whether that includes the Alya or not. Okay, however, the Mori asks Reb Zvid, if you're telling me that the alya is called, that the tail is called chelev in the pasuk, then titsa ba'achila, then it ought to be also to eat. And the fact is, it's not. Anytime that the fact is, you can't eat the tail of a sheep that's brought as a korban, of course, because it's offered on the mizbeach. That's the famous story in Pesachim with the goy who pretended to be a yid. And boasts of that to Rabbi Huda ben Beseira, and Rabbi Huda tells him next time asks for the alya, and that's how he ended up getting exposed as a goy. But in any case, so by a korban you can't eat it. By a chulin sheep, perfectly allowed to eat the tail. Well, why? If the Torah calls it chelev, then it should be like all the other chelev and be off limits. Amalei, so Rabbi Zvid says, Allah ha'amakra, to answer you, to forestall your question, is why the pasuk says, kol chelev shur v'chesev v'ez lois v'chelev. The Torah says, all chelev of an ox or a goat or sheep, you cannot eat. And therefore, what is that? Why does it have to list that? Just say chelev behema. Means dover ashova v'shur v'chesev v'ez. It means that what's also is only the same type of fat that you're going to find in all three of them. So the alya, again, by definition, you don't find that kind of fat tail in cattle and in goats. And therefore, the Torah is hinting to us that it's not also by sheep either. You have to bring it as a korban, but you don't have to bring it on the mizbeach, but you know, it's not also here. Okay, that's one answer. Rav Ashi says a different answer. Chelvoy ha'alya ikri, chelev sama la'ikri. Because the fact is, when the Torah mentions it with the word chelev, it calls it chelvoy, it's chelev ha'alya tzmima, the complete alya. So it calls it chelvoy ha'alya, or chelev ha'alya, it says on the side, it calls it the fact of the alya. Chelev stama la'ikri, but it's never called chelev without a descriptive term. And therefore, says Rav Ashi, the Torah would be answering for us only what's called chelev without an extra word attached to it. So we ask elamayata lo yimalugva. Well, in that case, then we're back to the question: why should me'ilah apply to it? If the Torah is saying kol chelev, but nevertheless, that should only include anything that's called chelev without any further specification. And then we're back to that it wouldn't apply to the al yedim. Fine. The Gemara says you're right. That answer doesn't work. Alam Chavar to Krim Zvid. It's clear that the answer is that Krim Zvid, that even though it's called Chelev, nevertheless you have the pasuk Shur Kol Chelev Shur V'Chesed V'Eiz, which teaches us that it's not in fact also to eat. Okay. So that covers then how we know. So in short, now we know how when the Mishnah had said that Me'ilah applies to Chelev. Now we understand why, because we have these two different drushas, and the two drushas complement one another, and they show us exactly what is and isn't also under the definition, what is and isn't subject to the dinim of Me'ilah. Again, by kodeshim, it doesn't matter. The whole animal is subject to Me'ilah until after the Chelev is offered on the Mizbeach. And then the meat becomes mutter for the kohanim to eat. In the case of kodeshim kalim, we're saying that Me'ilah doesn't begin to apply until the emurim have been removed from the animal. Next, we said in the Mishnah Mashenkin Bedam, on the other hand, we said that blood is not like that, that Me'ilah does not apply to it. So the Gemara says Minani Me'ilah, where do we know that from? So how do we know that it's like that pigul, mosu, and tomei don't apply? So the Gemara says, Oma Ola. So first of all, Ola says, Oma Kro, because the Pasuk says, Lochem. Because the Pasuk, when it describes that you're not allowed to eat the blood, it says, the life force of the animals, and it's Nefesh HaBos of Adomhi. And the Torah says, Vani Nesatav Lochem, Alam Mizbeach Lachakra. Hashem says, I've given it to you on the Mizbeach, to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach to accomplish a kapara. So that word Lochem teaches us, Shalochem Yehei, teaches us that it's yours, that it's yours, even though it's the blood of Kodshim, nevertheless it's considered yours, and there's no Chiyur of Me'ilah in it. Okay, that's one drasha. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned another way of learning it. In that same pasuk says lachaper. Hashem says, "I gave it to you to be lachaper." That implies for kapara nesativ lo lemeila. Hashem is saying, "I gave it to you for the purpose of kapara. I did not give it to you for the purpose of meila. I don't consider. I gave it that you should have a kapara. I'm not considering it my property that meila should apply to it." So in other words, the lachem is saying it's yours. The chapara is saying, Hashem is saying, even though in principle it should be considered mine because it's supposed to be sprinkled on mine is there, nevertheless Hashem says, I'm renouncing ownership of it, so to speak, and making it that now you, the only purpose for which I'm giving it to you, for which I want it to be done, is to be sprinkled on the mizbeach for kapara for you, but I'm not calling it mine that me'ilah should apply to. Rabbi Yechanan says a third way of learning it. Amakrahu. The same pasuk says, in the pasuk both who and he. Ki nefesh habos v'adam he, and later on ki adam hu v'nefesh echaper. See you at the end. Ki adam hu v'nefesh echaper. Blood, it is what is in the soul, and that's what atones. So that word who, says Rabbi Yechanan, we learn from that. Bahava yosi, so the word who often means, we often darshan, bahava yosi yehe, it means that it retains the same status. So here, Rabbi Yechanan is saying the same thing. When it says who, it means who, lifnei kapara, kalacha kapara. It means its status after the kapara, and before the kapara, is just like after the kapara. Now, after atonement has been accomplished, after the blood has been sprinkled on the mizbeach, for sure, ein bo me'ilah, there's no me'ilah in the leftover blood, or even if you scrape the blood off the mizbeach, because the rule is, you have dover shenasa mitzvaseh, as the Gemara is now going to work out. Dover shenasa mitzvaseh, when you have something where a mitzvah had to be done with it, and that mitzvah has been accomplished, then me'ilah no longer applies to it. So therefore, so after kapara, there's no me'ilah in the blood. After the kapara, ain't by me'ilah. Therefore, says Rabbi Yechanan, that word who teaches us that before kapara, there's no me'ilah in it either. So in other words, then, if a person were to use it, the mezid, he wouldn't be chayev. He wouldn't be chayev malchus, and if he does it for sure, he wouldn't be chayev to pay the basic mitzvah for the value of it and bring the korban, etc. So the Gemara says, why? If you're going to have a hekesh, ve'ema hu la'acha kapara, kilipne kapara. Maybe learn the other way around. Then it means that after the kapara, it has exactly the same status as before the kapara. Shma lifne kapara yesh me'ilah, af la'acha kapara yesh me'ilah. Before kapara, on the face of it, me'ilah ought to apply to it, the same as it does to anything where the mitzvah has not been accomplished yet. So maybe the Torah is telling us that by blood, you have an exception to the rule, and you actually have that me'ilah continues to apply even after it was brought on the mizbeach. So why don't we learn that way? And the answer is Ein l'chadavash anasim mitzvaser merven boy. We have a rule. We always find that you never find something that the mitzvah has been accomplished with it, and that me'ilah should still apply to it. So therefore, if the Torah is telling us over here a hekesh, it cannot mean to tell us in the direction. It cannot mean to tell us in the direction that that after the mitzvah has been done, then the ilah should still apply, because that violates that rule. Necessarily, it must be telling us the other way around that you have, that the mitzvah has not yet been done, but nevertheless, the Torah is telling you that the ilah won't apply to this blood. Tosfos points out, by the way, there are other Gemaras that imply, that say that Me'ilah does apply to blood. So first of all, Tosfos says there's a difference if, for example, if you let blood for an animal, a Chatrim, then Me'ilah is going to apply to that blood because the animal is still alive. But now we're talking about after Shlita, and then the blood is no longer subject to Me'ilah. Now you have other places where it talks about Me'ilah, but that would be, Tosfos explains that would be Midrabanan. For example, the Mishnah in Yumla tells us that the blood that would drain from the Mizbeach, that blood that was poured onto the base of the Mizbeach, Shira Adama, Yishrefach HaYisayd Ma'arovi, HaYisayd Jeremi, as we say in Ezer Mekoyman, it would drain out through a channel to Nachal Kidron, into the deep valley east of Yerushalayim, and Hekdesh would sell it to the local gardeners to use fertilizer. And the Mishnah says there, Mi'ilah applies to it. So the explanation is that Mi'ilah is Dirabanan. Midiraraisa, again, once the blood was sprinkled on them and poured on his bath, and then it's no longer subject to Mi'ilah. But the Chamin wanted to have, the Chamin wanted that people should treat it respectfully, and therefore they declared that Mi'ilah will apply to it, and therefore these farmers are paid if they want to use it. In any case, the point is that the Gemara is saying, because of the Hekesh, again, because we know the general rule that whenever you have something that the mitzvah has already been accomplished, then Mi'ilah will not apply to it anymore. And therefore, it has to be that the Torah is telling us that that even before Kapara, Mi'ilah won't apply to it either. So the Gemara says, Beloy, you're telling me not? I'll show you an example of something where mitzvah has been accomplished and nevertheless Mi'ilah still applies. Namely, Vahari Truma Sadeshin. What about the ashes that are taken off the Mizbeach every morning and put next to the Mizbeach? The Nasa Mitzvah. The Mitzvah has been accomplished. The Korban has already been burnt. The ashes have already been taken off the Mizbeach. Or Merlin Bo, and the Me'ilah still continues to apply to those ashes. Dichti Besomai Eitzama Mizbeach. The Posit says you should place it next to the Mizbeach. And Besomai means that it requires Gneza, means it has to be left there permanently, and you're not allowed to use it. It's also Vahanah. The Gemara elsewhere mentioned that a nest would happen and it would get swallowed up into the ground. Well, then, why should it be any different? With blood, why should we not say the same din should apply to blood as well after Nasa Mitzvah? And the answer is, that's true. By Truma Sadeshin, you do have that. But Mishum Dehavoy, Truma Sadeshin, a big day corner, Shnei Ksum Avoyim Tehachol. But because Truma Sadeshin and Big Dei Kohuna, namely the clothing that the Kohen Gadol wore on Yom Kippur for the avodas that he does in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Big Dei Lavan over there, those are Shnei Ksum, Avoyim Tehachol, those are two psukim that teach us the same din. For the whole Shnei Ksum, Avoyim Tehachol, and Melamdin, whenever you have two psukim that teach us the same din in two different contexts, then we say we can't learn from that to anything else. Namely, in other words, if the Torah wants to tell us that even though the mitzvah has been accomplished with something, nevertheless, Me'ilah still applies, then the Torah would have told us that by one place, and we would do a binyan av from it to everywhere else. But once the Torah tells us by two different things, by Truma Sadeshin and by the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, then we say it means only those things and no others. So those things, even though the mitzvah is done, they still remain osvana. But everything else, the rule is going to be that once the mitzvah has been accomplished, Me'ilah no longer applies. Well, therefore, the blood, which we're talking about over here, the blood of Kodshim, once the mitzvah has been accomplished, once it's sprinkled on the Mizbeach, there's no question Me'ilah should not apply to him. So now Rabbi Yochanan is learning from the word hu in the pasuk that the same thing is going to apply in the case of blood, even before kapara. So that's why Truma Sadeshin is not a violation of that rule, because in fact Truma Sadeshin is one of these shneiks of Mavon Techa. The question is which principle that Abonon? Fine, but that was, yeah, what?
Which principle of Rabbi Ishmael is that?
That it's not one of the Yudim Midas, if that's what you're asking, at least on the face of it, not. But it may be a subset of one of them. I don't know. It might be a subset. It's a, you know, you have binyan av mitosavach or binyan av mishnei ksuvim. So binyan av mishnei ksuvim would be sometimes you have, as we had a couple of days ago in the Gemara, for example. Sometimes we can't learn from one thing because it has a certain chumra of its own, and therefore we have to learn from a combination of two or three things of tzad hashava. Fine, but if there's no reason for a tzad hashava, then a subset of that would be, on the contrary, when you have Shnei Ksuvim and they both teach us the same thing, then in fact you can't learn from it from anything else. That breaks down the rule of Binyan Av.
Each of these Yudgim Amidus really is like a family of rules. Kal v'chomer, for example, also includes Tzad HaShoveh, and also includes Dayoy, and also includes various other things of it. You know, Gzeir HaShoveh includes the whole matter of Mufne, whether the words for the Gzeir HaShoveh are extra, etc. Each one of them is really an overarching rule which has many sub-rules under it. There are Sfarim, such as Sefer Krisos and others, that go in detail and explain and tease out all of these things. Okay.
So the most explicit piece.
What?
It's not said explicitly in...
Lots of things are not said explicitly, but that's how it is. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Hanichal Rabbanon...
Where are you on the page?
Hanichal Rabbanon, the Amri v'yinicham shom malam chitonin gneza. Now, this works out according to the Rabbanon, who say that when... Now, the Torah tells us about the Kohen Gadol, it says he has to change out of his Big Day Lavan and change into Big Day Zahav to do more of the Avodah, and the Torah says v'yinicham shom that he should leave the clothing there. So the Chachamim learn that that means that it becomes... Oh, that's also to ever use that clothing again. That says the tunin gneza, malamish tunin gneza, that teaches us that that clothing has to be hidden away, and even that Kohen Gadol cannot use it on another Yom Kippur. Or a Kohen Hadyet couldn't use them any other time during the year, even though they're the same clothing as the Kohen Hadyet wears all year round. However, Rav Dosa learns it means that the Kohen Gadol cannot use it for a different Yom Kippur, but he says a Kohen Hadyet could in fact use them for the rest of the year. So according to that, then it comes out that you don't have a case where the mitzvah has been done with it, and nevertheless it's still also banal. Then what are you going to say? You have Truma Sadeshin, where Me'ilah continues to apply to it even after it was taken off the Mizbeach, and you should learn a binyan out from that the same thing should apply to blood. Why are you saying no? So the Gemara says, fine, it's true. Here's a different way. Ella, Mishum Dahavoy Truma Sadeshin, the Egla Arufa, Shnek Suma Boyin Tachon. Because you have Truma Sadeshin, and the Egla Arufa is also two psukim that teach us the same thing. And again, the whole Shnek Suma Boyin Tachon Engelandin. Namely, the Egla Arufa is also, even after now, the mitzvah has been accomplished. You decapitated, as it says at the end of Parashas Shoftim, and then that's it. On the face of it, the mitzvah is over. And then they say they do the rest of the ceremony, but that's it. On the face of it, there's nothing else to be done with it. Nevertheless, the Gemara learns from psukim. And the pasuk says, "Ba'orfu shom as the egla," they should decapitate there the other calf. And we learn from that word shom there that it remains also bahana shom tehekvod also. It has to be buried there, and it's also bahana. Well, then, so then we have so also shnei suma b'im tafla. Okay, the Gemara says, "Vanichal manda amash ein lamdin." Fine, that works according to the Chachamim, who say that once you have shnei suma b'im tafla, then you can't learn from it to anything else. But you do have an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in a few places in Shas, who says that you could even learn from Shnei Suma Boim Tafad, the fact that you have an extra posuk. Okay, he can say, you know, sometimes you have something which we could have learned in a different way, and nevertheless the Torah still bothers to write it for us again. You have something the Gemara will tell us sometimes, for example, Milstid asked of Kavachoymer, something that could have been learned by Kavachoymer, nevertheless Torah Fakos of Lakral, the posuk still takes the trouble to write it for us. But same thing over here, you could have learned it from a second, you could have learned it from one, by a binyan. Fine, the Torah bothers to write it again for reasons that we don't know. But so according to the Yehuda, the fact that you have Shnei Ksuvim is not a reason not to learn from it. So then Ma'ik Lameima, according to him, what are you going to say? Why can't we learn from Truma Sadeshin and Egla Arufa, both of them Nasis Mitzvasa, and still Me'ilah applies, and apply the same thing to the blood? And the answer is, even according to him, now, of course, the Gemara could have answered that he doesn't hold like Rav Dosa, he doesn't hold that the Kohen Gadol are kosher to ever use again. So he could say there are three, and the Gemara elsewhere explains that even when there are three psukim, Abayim Kafad, even Rav Yehuda is going to agree, you can't learn from them. However, the Gemara wants to find an answer, even if you're going to say that Rav Yehuda does agree with Rav Dosa. And the answer is, Treni Utik Sil. The reason is because you actually have Mi'utim in both of these places, to tell us that it applies only there. Namely, Chalka, over here, by Truma Sadeshin, Ksiv V'Samay, it says you should place it. So that means only it is subject to this rule of having to be placed there and left there and left there and not, and the Osabana, but not anything else. And the same thing, Hosam, Ksiv Ha Arufa, and by the Egla Arufa, it says Ha Arufa, the one that was decapitated, again implying that it means only by the Egla Arufa does this apply, not to other dinim. So this wonder is why you need two miut, and then why just have one miut and then have done with it. So there's a Tosfos in the Sefer Me'ilah, you have the Sugya as well. Tosfos discusses that point that you can't say that it's to tell us that you shouldn't learn from the other one, then there was no reason to write a miut at all. So Tosfos explains that the Torah did, after all, have to write for Arufa, that only this is the only case where you have Arufa, where you have that decapitation, not anything else. So the fact that the Gemara is saying you have a miut by both of them is really not Davka, it's really you have the miut is really by the Sar. And then Tosfos elsewhere, there's a Tosfos in Psachim that gives a different answer on it. Okay, so you have a couple of reasons then why you need various miut. So that covers that then. So that's how we know. So again, we have three different limudim, how we know that Me'ilah does not apply to blood. One because of the word lochem, one because of the word b'chaper, and then we have Rabbi Yochanan's thing about because the Torah is making a hekesh, and we worked out how in fact that hekesh cannot possibly teach us that Me'ilah should apply to the blood after kafara, because only by Truma Sadeshen and Egla Arufa, and according to the Chachamim, also be the Kohen Gadol, does that apply that the mitzvah has been accomplished, and nevertheless Me'ilah still applies, so by blood that won't be the case, and therefore the hekesh teaches us that by blood Me'ilah does not apply before kapara either. So the Gemara says, "Tlosa kroy lomeli b'dam." Now we have three words in that pasuk: lachem, lachaper, and hu. And we have the different amiroyim are learning each one, are learning the limud from there. How we know that me'ilah does not apply to blood. Well, why do we need all three of them? So the answer is chadam urtini noiser, because so far we've been discussing only me'ilah. But the fact is, we said in our Mishnah that blood is not subject to pigul or noiser or tameh either. So therefore, so chadam urtini noiser. So one of them tells us that blood is not subject to the issue of noiser. So in other words, that if the blood was left over and a person ate it, b'shoigig, so he's going to be chayev. He's going to be chayev for eating blood. He's going to have to bring a chatas for that. But he's not going to also have to bring a chatas for having eaten noiser, because noiser is not applicable to the blood. So that's one plus it tells us not that. One tells us that me'ilah is not going to apply. And one tells us that the issue of tumah doesn't apply, namely again that if a person was tummy and ate the blood, then nevertheless he's going to be chayev for eating blood, but he's not going to be chayev for eating kodshim when he's tummy. And the Gemara points out, but to tell us that pigul does not apply to blood, that you actually don't even need a pasuk for. So, in other words, you would ask, we have four things that aren't applicable to blood, how can we learn it from three miyotim in the pasuk? And the answer is, pigul doesn't even require its own miyot. Tosfos wonders actually that on the face of it, noisim and tumah should also be covered by one miyot, because you have a gzeira shava between them, but at any rate, you have three miyotim over here, and the three miyotim are for me'ilah, for noiser, and for tomei. So avol mipigul letzarech pura, but to tell us that blood is not subject to pigul, for that you don't need a pasuk. It's not, but we learn in the Mishnah and Zvachim, kol sheyesh lematirin, anything that has a matir bein la'odem bein la'mizbeach, whether for the person to eat it or whether for the mizbeach to consume it. Then a person will be chayav for eating it from a korban that became pigul. Namely, in other words, so let's say, for example, when you bring a korban, what makes it that the koyanim or the owner, respectively, are allowed to eat it is when the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach. In the case of burning on the mizbeach, when can you burn that oila on the mizbeach after you sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach? So the blood is the matir of the korban. And we had learned in Zvachim over there many other examples of that. The korimetz is a matir for the mincha, and you have a lot of other examples like that. Well, the dam gufe, matir hu, the blood itself is not matir, something else. The blood is its own matir. So in other words, the chaylev you can consider to be a matir in the sense, once the chaylev is offered on the mizbeach, then the koyanim and the owners respectively can eat their parts. But the blood itself is just matir itself. There's nothing that you can say once the blood is offered, doesn't have some prerequisite before that's offered on the mizbeach, that it needs to be that before you can sprinkle it. So it's its own matter, and therefore the rule of pigul does not apply to it. So you don't even need a pasuk to tell us that. We can derive that from that general rule, which back in Zvachim we had learned that rule in turn from Sukkim, but the point is we don't need a miut over here to tell us that it shouldn't apply to blood. So it would be, like Rashi points out, we have other examples like that as well. The koimitz of the mincha itself, if a koyin were to eat the koimitz of a mincha that became piggle, he wouldn't be chayav for piggle. Same thing, the koimitz is its own matzah. There's no prerequisite before it. The same thing with the Torah, and you have a number of other examples like that. Rashi brings briefly from what we learned in Zvachim, because where do we learn piggle? The Torah first tells us about piggle by a shlomim, and shlomim have matirim, and therefore we learn that only something that has a matir is subject to piggle. And therefore, blood not. So therefore, we don't need a pasuk that blood is not subject to piggle. And therefore, we just have pesukim to tell us, we have miyukim in the pasuk to tell us that it's not subject to meila, or to the dinim of noser, or to the dinim of a person eating it when he's hungry. Okay. Have run alach kol avasim. The next parak over here, we're going to start the ninth parak of the Masechta now. We are going to be talking about the halachas of Tumah v'Tahara. Really, in a sense, it belongs to Seder Taras, but it's here in Cholin. One thing is, I mean, first of all, as a practical matter, you know, you have the same way as we have to be careful with the food that we eat, as far as kashrus, as far as the animal wasn't tefa, as far as that we're not eating gira nosha, we're not eating basa b'cholav, and so on and so forth. The same way, when they had to be careful about Tumah v'Tahara, they would have to be careful about their truma and their kodshim, that they don't become tamei. And as we learned earlier in the Masechta, some people would even eat their Cholin in a standard of Tara as well. Tosfos points out, though, that there is a more direct connection to our Masechta. Earlier, at the end, near the end, in the middle of the fourth parak, we talked about a shilya. We talked about the amniotic sac of an animal that's usually born together with the baby. So we said Tumas Oichlin won't apply to it. Tumas Oichlin and Tumas Nevelis won't apply to it. So now, we're saying that there's something that came out of the animal, and the Tumah of food doesn't apply to it, so now we're going to take up that point about what things are and aren't subject to Tumas Oichlin. So why Tosfos says, and we're 40 blocks later, we're many, many, many chapters later, what happened in between, Tosfos says, because we also learned over there about the din when you shecht an animal and find a baby in the womb, where it's subject to the din of Oisav Espinoy, you can't shecht the mother and the baby on the same day. So therefore, so now we talk about and then we talk about Kisei Adam, which also has to do with dinim of Shchita over there, about Shchita Shein Eruya, and then we mention that Kisei Adam applies to Chaya and Oif, so Gira Nosha is the same, which applies to Chaya and not Oif, and therefore we mention a thigh in which Gira Nosha was cooked and absorbed, so therefore we talk about Bas B'Cholav, where you also have issues of bleus, of absorption. Now, having dealt with all of those digressions, Tosfos says, now we're getting back to the matter of Tumas Oichlin. So one important thing we're going to learn, we're going to start with one basic fact that we're going to talk about a lot at the beginning of our parak over here is like this. Food itself can become tamei on a daraisa level, and it's able to be metamei other food, and we're going to talk about you have the tumah of food, which is called tumah kala, versus you have the tumah of nevela, which is called tumah chamura, in the sense that it's a stronger tumah, in the sense that tamei food on daraisa level is only able to be metamei other foods or drinks. Only the Dirabbanan, they have certain cases where tamei food can be the tamei a person or kalim. If a person eats tamei food, for example, there's a Xeder Dirabbanan, then he becomes tamei. But the daraisa food can only be the tamei other food. So it's called tumah kala, a lighter kind of tumah. As opposed to if the meat comes, for example, from a nevela, then it has tumah hamura, then it has a stronger tumah, because the Torah tells us the person who touches it or carries it is going to become tamei, and his clothing becomes tamei, and he needs tevila, and he needs head of shemesh. So we're going to be talking about that point. We're also going to be talking about the point of the concept of yad and shomer. A yad means a handle. So like, for example, you have, let's say, a piece of meat attached to a bone. You use the bone to pick up the meat and to eat it. Or you have a fruit attached to a stem. You use the stem to pick up the fruit. So that kind of thing is called a yad. We're going to learn in the Gemara now. We're going to learn in the Gemara over the next few days that a yad, the same way as the food itself is subject to tumah, so is the yad. Then you also have what's called shomer. You have something that preserves and guards the food. For example, the peel of a fruit, even if the peel itself is inedible, or the shell of an egg, or the skin on meat, etc. That's called shomer. And also, it's able to become tamei just like the food itself is. So let's say, for example, a piece of skin by itself might not be able to become tamei with tumas oichlin because not edible. But if it's attached to the meat, then it could. So those are things that we're going to be talking about at the beginning of the parak, and then as we go through, we're going to be talking about various details of tumah v'tahara. So the Mishnah starts off ha'or, the skin of an animal, v'haroitev, and the juices, the soup, the gravy, or whatever. So Rashi translates with a French word, which means glaire or whatever, which means basically like you have a liquidy stuff that comes out on the surface of the meat. So it itself is not edible, but when you eat the meat, then you eat that together with it as well. Vahakifa, and the sediment, when you, we've had kifa before in Masechta. Basically what it means is when you cook a pot of meat, you have stuff that falls to the bottom. You have little shreds of meat mixed with spices and mixed with other things that tend to fall to the bottom. That kind of thing is called kifa. Here, Rashi translates kifa specifically means the spices. Now, spices are not edible by themselves, but they can combine together with the meat and make up a shear of turba. The Gemara is going to bring two different opinions of what olol is. One is that it means when you skin an animal, sometimes you have little shreds of meat that stay stuck to the skin. You don't always cut exactly at the point where the skin and the flesh attach. Sometimes you cut a little too far in and you end up with a little bit of meat attached to the skin. So according to one opinion, the Gemara, that's what's called olol. What?
I think it's like...
No, so the other opinion of olol, so that's one opinion, is that's those shreds of meat. The other explanation is that it means the gid of the neck, the ligament of the neck, which is particularly, we're going to mention gidim next, but this neck ligament is extremely hard, and therefore you would think if you say that other gidim are included in the food, you wouldn't think that one is. Nevertheless, the Mishnah needs to tell us that. So olol has nothing to do with the stomach, to the best of my knowledge, and the bones. Now Rashi explains we're talking about over here specifically where the bones contain marrow. So now the marrow itself is food, and the bone would be a shreimer for it. And therefore, like we said, like a peel of a fruit, and therefore it would be counted. The Rambam actually points out that it can mean even if it's just attached to the meat, because then it wouldn't be a shomer, but it would be a yad. On the other hand, actually, the text of Mishnah says that even according to the Rambam, it's not a shomer. We're talking about the bones are a little bit edible also. They're softish bones, and therefore they can combine together with the meat. Okay, so we have a few different possibilities of what kind of bones we're talking about over here. Vahagidim, and gidim, which as we've learned before, gidim is a general term in Shas that includes many different structures in the animal. So it can be, and in addition, also there's a difference between soft ones, which are part of the meat itself, versus hard ones, which are less edible. So all those things, bakarnayim, and the horns of the animal, in particular, we don't mean the whole horn. Rashi points out it's the lower part of the horn where if you cut it, then blood will come out. So we're talking about close to the base where the horn comes out of the skull, then there you have a softish area over there. So all these things, the point is all these things would not be eaten by themselves, but they could be eaten together with the meat. Batlafayim, and the hooves, so all those things, and Rashi points out the hooves will be an example of a shomer. They protect the meat that's inside them. Tosfos brings a different gear set that also mentions the claws and the beak of a bird. In any case, so all of those things, all those combined together with the meat, Latame, Chumas Oifen, to become Tomei with the Tumah of food, Avalo Chumas Nevelas, but they won't combine together as far as the stronger Tumah of Nevela. So in other words, like this we have, when it comes to food, there's a machlokas we show him, how much food do you need in order to become Tomei in the first place? Rashi and Tosfos consistently hold in many places in Shaf that you need a Kazayas in order to become Tomei in the first place, and then to be Matame. Other food, you're not a size, kibetza rather. You need a kibetza, an egg size volume of food, to become tome in the first place, and also to be mitame other food. The Rambam holds to become tome, any amount would become tome. To be mitame others, you need a kibetza. So now we're saying over here, if you have, for example, you have a piece of meat that itself is not a kibetza, and then you have the skin or the roitev or all these other things that are attached to it, then they can help make up the kibetza for it to become tome, or to be metame other food. But not tumas nevelas. If you have a piece of a nevela, that's less than a kazayas, with a nevela as a kazayas, that's metame, and you have part, and then part of that kazayas is made up of skin, or roitev, or whatever, then that won't count together with it. Then, similarly, the Mishnah continues, Tayotzeboi, similarly, Ashokat behemat tmeya lo'ovi gachavim, a person sheds a non-kosher species of animal for a yid. For a goy, rather. He shechted the behemoth's mayor for a goy, almost for kesis, and the animal is still moving around convulsively. It hasn't stopped moving yet. Now, Rashi explains, first of all, the kayotze means like this. We said that we have certain things that to which tumas oson applies, but not tumas nevelis. So now, similarly, here's another example of a case which has tumas oson, but not tumas nevelis. So dafka, Rashi says, all four things that we mentioned over here, that it's Yisrael, that it's shechti, that it's a behemoth tmeya, and for a goy, all of those points are significant. Because, in other words, so he shechted it, and it's still mefakesis. It's not, the goy can't eat it yet, because the goy has to wait until it stops moving. B'nei Noyach, also a Jew, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, would be mutter to shecht an animal, and while it's still convulsively moving, he can cut off a piece of it. He has to wait till it's dead to actually eat it, but he can cut off a piece while it's still moving around, and it's, once it's shechted already, it's not Eva Menachai, and then he'd be able to eat it. A goy would not be allowed to. Nevertheless, though, so for the goy, it's not suitable yet, so therefore you should say, Trinav Tumas Oichlin. But the fact is, it was a Yisrael, and he did do a proper shechita, so even though it was a non-kosher animal, therefore his machshava can make it considered food, even though this is a behemoth meah, relative to the goy, even though the goy himself can't eat it yet. Whereas if a goy had shechted it, it wouldn't matter, because for him there's no such thing as shechita. And if a yid had not done shechita, if a yid had killed it some other way, he wouldn't have the ability to make it food, because there's no concept of a yid doing the chirum. So that's what Rashi explains, that all four details over here are significant in order to say that Tumas Oichlin will apply. So then the same thing with Tama Tumas Oichlin is such the meat of that animal will be able to contract Tumas Oichlin. For example, if it's touched by a source of Tumas, such as a sheriff, Avaloi Tumas Nevelis, but the Tumah of Nevela will not apply to it, Adshat Tumas, until the animal actually fully dies and stops moving, Ayadshat Yachtis Asrosha, or unless he chops off the head, well there, and we learned earlier in the Masechta, such a thing is called Gistera, it's called the animal has in effect been divided into two, and such a thing then it's considered Nevela already. So now, even if it's not Kessis, even if it's moving around, it's already considered dead, and then Tumas Nevelis will apply as well. Therefore, so we see, says the Mishnah, Riba l'tamer tumas oichlin, mimashri Riba l'tamer tumas nevelis. So we see the Torah is telling us, in effect, that, as we're going to learn from Sukkim in the Gemara, that there's more cases where something can be considered food as far as tumas oichlin, where it's not considered food as far as tumas nevelis. Even though on the face of it, they could come from a nevela, and it could be shayach, nevertheless now, Rashi explains. Rabbi Yehuda says, as far as one of the things that we mentioned, we had a whole list of things that we said that are combining for Tumas Oichlin. Rabbi Yehuda says, with one of them, Olol HaMachonas, if a person gathers together Olol in one place, and again, whether Olol means these shreds of meat that were attached, that still remain attached to the skin of the animal, or whether it means the neck, or whether it means the neck tendon, either way, if you gather it together, says Rabbi Yehuda, and Yeshua Kazayis Makam Echad, if you have a Kazayis all together in one place, then it wouldn't be bottle, chayev all of that, a person would be chayev for it, namely, if it comes from a nevela, and there was a kezayis of it all together, and he touched it, then he would be chayev for tumas mitzvah for kodesh, if he then went into the bis mitzvah. When he was tomei, you wouldn't say that he didn't become tomei, Rabbi Yehuda holds, he is in fact tomei on a daraisa level, and he would be chayev, and he would be chayev kodesh, or a korban, as the case may be, if he becomes tomei from that. Namely, in other words, Tosfos explains, Rabbi Yehuda is obviously not saying that he's chayev for nevela. For that, it doesn't need to be collected together into one place. He means as far as tumas nevela. Rashi actually later does understand Rabbi Yehuda to be saying as far as eating as well, Rabbi Yehuda would agree a person is not chayev for eating it by itself, but if it was all gathered together, then he would. So the Gemara starts off. This is what we said in the Mishnah. Not the shomer, that for example, the skin.
Alexander, can we for tomorrow? It's getting late.
Yeah, I guess we can do that. Okay, fine. So we'll start the Gemara tomorrow, Mr. Shem.
Just carry on.
Okay.